Hey, welcome to the Mostly Skateboarding Podcast. I'm your host, Mike Munzenreiter, and I'm joined this week by Patrick Kagongo and Jason from Frozen and Carbonite. Village Psychic's visit with the man behind the secret tape got us thinking about collecting, filling basements. Holy cow. But first, it's time for a sim check. Quasi's out with another video this week. It's called Simulation. Could have been called The Simulation, I just realized as I read that. Maybe we'll discuss the name a little later. Who knows? It features a four-man roster and lots of cutty spots from east of the Mississippi. Hold on, I'm touching my earpiece. We're now going live to our DMV correspondent, Jason from Frozen and Carbonite. Did they do the zone proud in this one? Can you hear me?
Here, got you loud and clear, Mike. Well, yeah, I think, everyone knows that Richmond is a quasi-town. I mean, that's, common knowledge. So for this video, they're probably like, well, what can we do? Let's expand north into the northern Virginia region. And this kid, Jason Nam, this was my favorite part in the video. I knew he was going to be the next to blow up out of D.C. because he's had some pretty killer parts in like a handful of like the last few D.C. videos come out, like three of them, just like tech. But power, not too much flip in, flip out shit. Really stood out was the backside nose grind revert at Pulaski. I'll come back to that later. But as far as what this video is all about, it's all about John Rowe going pro with a two-song part and just kind of like the victory of the dirtbag vibe. Because I think that's kind of what the kids are into these days. Just being a dirtbag, skating cutty spots, just like it's a whole philosophy, just like being a dirtbag.
Can we talk about the big reveal where John Rowe is wearing a bunch of hats? I was completely unaware of guy singular. He's wearing hats, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, he's losing some hair.
Oh,
all
yeah.
I'm not calling it out. I'm saying all of a sudden I'm like, oh shit, I respect him even more.
Yeah, he's the man. But in addition to the mini hats.
Many shoes.
Many people have pointed out the myriad of different shoe brands that he wears in this part. I thought it was pretty hilarious. Not sure if it was like a bit, like it was planned out, but I thought it was pretty funny.
That used to be quite common back in the day, though. You'd have somebody who was not necessarily getting boxes, regular boxes from a shoe company, and they were skating a combination of stuff that they'd purchased off the rack, shoes that they'd been given, shoes that had been sent to them, or maybe shoes from a former sponsor that they were just running through. I liked it. It gave a lot of variety. And also, if it's a bit, more power to them, but I like that dedication to the swag, though. I like the idea that different outfits with different shoes, and that's something you can really only do when you're mixing up with different brands. Anyway, I really like Dick Rizzo. Dick Rizzo, to me, spiritual successor to Bobby Pulio, especially when it comes to the crouch, more specifically when he is skating, really like tight transition. First of all, he's a super nice guy. Second of all, I almost feel like he's a bit underrated. What do y'all think?
He's hard to rate, I think, in full, just like reacting to what you said, honesty. What do you think, Jason? Shit, he's putting back his headset on.
Well, yeah, my headphone fell out. Well, yeah, I mean, with all the heavy hitters on there, on Quasi, you got Jake, you got Gilbert, I mean, you got Bobby, one of, like, the most stellar, like, tech guys out there. He kind of, not hard to get lost in the shuffle there, but, I kind of think he is a little bit underrated in terms of the shit he does. Like, yeah, like Patrick said, spiritual successor to Pulio, like, remember in Penal Code, Pulio does that, like, switch wall ride, and then he, like beams the wall.
Yeah, he gives the death stare.
Yeah, death stare to the wall. Like, he does similar type of shit, like, along the same lines, like switch wall ride, switch pivot, that kind of thing, street transition. So, yeah, as far as kind of, like, cool, I don't even want to say creative, but, like, not
esoteric.
Like...
Esoteric.
Yeah, esoteric. Yeah, that's a better way to put it. Like, esoteric terrain, I think. And plus, he's still running the brown pants and black half calves, classic. Timeless look. Don't know if they were brown cords. It doesn't even really matter. Just like the color scheme. Yeah, can't go wrong with some baggy brown pants and some black hat.
Like a trick that real quick, Patrick. Trick that stood out to me, and I think he kind of mentioned it, Jason. Like he rolls in switch to like kind of like a dish, not a ditch, but a dish. Switch Roland goes up, front side, blurs the lines of fakie or switch. Fakie front side pivot is what it ends up being, and goes in fakie. And it's like, oh shit, that's really hard. And also, I mean, I'll run with the word I said, esoteric. It's like, wow. A lot of people aren't looking at that and going, oh shit, I could never do that. They're just like, whoa, next trick.
Actually, I'm going to have to go back and watch that one because it didn't really stand, like, jump out as like a hammer or whatever. But yeah, I'm going to have to go back and, you know, people at
one of those just like
transition.
Oh, wow, that's stupid hard. And who's going to notice that? Not that I'm like, you know, God eyes, I see everything. But like one of those silly hard tricks that's just in there.
Can we talk about the denim car? It has really grown on
that
me.
Whole thing.
I know. Yo, is denim car going to get a board? Or going to be on PermaFlow? What do y'all think?
I think it's Gilbert's homie, right?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure who the pilot, who fabricated the denim on the denim car. It might have been Will, the filmer. But yeah, not sure. But I wonder if it's street legal. Mm. Like, they sure put a hurting on it, like with that gap, I guess. Ollie the Pyramid.
My buddy had a Ford Probe. And we thought the car was whack even before he jumped off like a similar ditch, and then he dropped the transmission, and that was the end of the Ford Probe. Like we skated the spot, and then he jumped it off the thing that, like, I, you know, we were trying to like kickflip a bench off of, and then the car was done after that, and we're like, huh, that car is whack.
What a miserable vehicle. Like Ford in the 1990s, I mean, except for the trucks, they couldn't get anything right. The Ford Escort, the Ford Probe, I mean, Lord, although the Ford Taurus with the SHO package was kind of hard body. I had a gym teacher, Mr. Rubenstein, he had one.
Is that the was that the cop package?
Yeah.
Basically, yeah. I mean,
I remember that.
Taurus, or as my buddy Sam McGuire, who drove like multiple Tauri, used to call him Taurass.
There you go.
Yeah,
that's the whole thing.
But back to the video. Also, I like the fact that you're encouraged to watch this on TV, and I did watch this on TV. I didn't watch it on my laptop or on my phone, and it was nice too because it's been getting very, very hot here. So I was just sitting in the living room and said, you know what, I'm going to be 100% present with the video. And that is something that is challenging these days because, I mean, we're competing. A skate video is competing for screen time. And something I really, really, really liked about this video too was it's only 18 minutes long. It's technically 17:46. That to me is the ideal length for video. Because when you get into like a 45-minute joint, that is a little too long to get you to, you know, get up and get hyped. And now it's one thing to watch something that long at a premiere or at a shop where you're just, you know, shooting the shit, whatever. Anyway, back to somebody else who stood out in this video. Y'all talked about him just a few minutes ago, but Jason Nam, and seeing him skating Archives in DC, which is not too far from Freedom Plaza. And for a while, that was the bust, not bust free, but less of a bust than going to Freedom, because I got a nasty ticket there in 06, and I was so tight about that. But yeah, he does a backsmith 180 out, at the ledge at Archives, and there's a metro bus that's passing by, and he's really, 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 really good. And I think, you know, to your earlier point, in the intro, Mike, you talked about the DMV, DC, Maryland, Virginia, for those who don't know. You know, with Philly, you know, with Muni gone, it seems like Pulaski is the last great plaza spot. And how do you preserve that? Like, how do you keep that going? I mean, granted, there's talk in DC of raising it and building on top of it, or maybe expanding street access, which just seems silly because, I mean, it's a beautiful spot. And it's like also downtown DC's population is shrinking in terms of daytime population because not too many folks live there. It's mostly office buildings of lots of different types. And why not just let people skate it? Anyway, a bit of a meandering question, but I guess the Reader's Digest version of it is, what's next for the DMV these next couple of years now that Muni is gone?
Well, real quick, before we get to that, back to Pulaski, it kind of trips me out that people are still like unlocking new ways to skate it. Like that, the ledge that Jason Nam did a backside nose ground revert on, like people have been skating that thing. Last time I was there, some guy did a 360 flip nose manual like across it. And down, which is insane. So yeah, I mean, I think as long as people have been figuring it out for like whatever 30, 35 years or whatever. So I think as long as it's there, people are going to keep figuring out new ways to skate it. But yeah, I'm not sure how to preserve it. I'd just ask the mayor, like her office is right there. Like she looks down on it, I think.
What, just pull up?
Just pull up on the mayor.
I actually love that direct democracy approach. Like is Freedom / Pulaski, how legal is it anymore? Like Patrick, you were just talking about getting a ticket.
That was 06.
Ticketing? Do they just run you off? Like what happens there nowadays?
Nowadays, I think, well, I mean, this is always a good philosophy. Just like move how the locals move. Like,
yeah,
if you see cop cars come in and the locals kind of go across the street or chill out or stop skating or whatever, then just, you know, kind of do that. But I don't think they're doing like the harsh, you know, tickets, board confiscation, that kind of stuff. Like, 15,
it's not 1998 or whatever anymore.
Yeah. No, it's not. They're not like cuffing people like that one photograph, that one, I guess, semi-famous photograph.
Oh, you just reminded me of the end of Final. Oh, it's Andy Stone. So Andy Stone from an old Capital ad, if I recall, him getting cuffed up at Pulaski. He also just reminded me of the end of Fine Artist Volume 1 with that huge fight at Freedom Plaza.
Yeah, that was gnarly. It was a different time.
Yeah, it was a different. But that was like a normal thing at any major skate plaza. You know, any big skate plaza, there was going to be some kind of beef. You know, Lee Smith talked about it in his, I want to say, what's that interview that he does? Oh, no. That's, I think it was actually on his own show, on his own interview series. I thought it was maybe on his 9 Club interview where he talked about how some of the folks from EMB got into graffiti and somebody crossed out some well-known crew, and then it led to beef. Anyway, there's also stuff that's significantly crazier happening in DC at any given time. I mean, there's been some pretty controversial protests that have happened at Freedom Plaza. So in the grand scheme of things, a bunch of skateboarders who are certainly more respectful than we all used to be 10 and even 20 or 30 years ago. Like we're not that big of an issue. Also shout out to our Carlos Pooch Kenner and
yes, sir.
You know, Darren Harper. The Don.
Darren Harper's got his girls there.
Yo,
you know, time. And they're, you know, just being amazing little people learning how to skateboard. And yeah, it's wholesome.
I mean, it's good. Tink and Demi are honestly like those two. That's going to be the next LeVar and Marcus right there.
Oh, Tink with the half cab heels the other day. That's so great.
Like, and it's nice too. Like they're good. Like they're holding it down. And what's exciting about that is, you know, there was a moment that went viral sometime back where it was an interview with him and one of the local news affiliates. And then that went all over the place because people said, hey, this is father-daughter bonding, you know. And he's an awesome dude. I mean, shout out to Darren Harper. Seriously, like, duffed out Stevie Williams and lived to tell the tale. but then back to Quasi. Something I like to think about with Quasi is that, you know, we talked about, I previously spoke about Bobby Pulio and Dick Rizzo being the spiritual successor, you know. I think Quasi is carrying on the legacy of Alien Workshop in the best ways possible. And I'm thinking about this because Darkroom just announced that they're going to be shutting down. And that's Pendleton, who did a lot of the graphics for Workshop. And so a lot of people are just buying up stuff on fire sale just so they can have a little bit of something of his. And I don't know. I mean, I love the fact that Quasi shines a light on parts of the country which have always had great scenes. But, you know, for a lot of people out here in California, we just don't pay attention to them. Or we didn't traditionally. You know, more specifically, the Mid-Atlantic, the Midwest. I love the spots that they're picking and just like the places that they're pulling up to.
So I have been a, you know, quasi, this is the brand, not the adjective, quasi skeptic, right? In terms of like, I can't place the brand sometime.
Well, it's Americana, right?
Well, and when you say that, I'm like, okay, I get that. As a successor, and I'm not calling you out, Patrick, I'm just curious if you could, you know, explain what you think in terms of like successor of Alien Workshop, because I don't think Workshop was necessarily like Americana. And I will say, you know, like the, what, you know, 45 seconds or whatever, the montage of, you know, weird kind of hillbillies doing stuff.
Yes, I was going to ask you I saw that, I was like, man, I know Mike is loving this little Mike.
It's just, okay, wow, montage. We're adding to the video, like, this dude's pants are around his ass and he's pumping gas. Cool, let's laugh at him. Like, I don't know, he's probably got a house and we've decided it's bad to, you know, laugh at unhoused people, but I'm not trying to soapbox here. I just don't think it added anything, to be completely easy. And in terms of, like, you know, we're talking about a video. Videos are supposed to do stuff. Like, how is it the successor to Alien Workshop?
I think Alien Workshop.
I just don't see it beyond the skaters, you know? They have some of the skaters.
I think it's obviously the skaters, but then it's also the point of view. I think it's, granted, there's not like a bunch of really cool artsy intermissions of stuff in and around Ohio, but I think it's the spots, because you saw plenty of crust, Midwest and Mid-Atlantic crust, in the last few workshop videos. I think also it is, I guess, it's because workshop's thing was coming through from a place of a slightly or very, depending on the day, very paranoid vision of America. And I think Quasi picks up on that unease. And I didn't love zooming in on just random, you know, random civilians and homeless people trying to go about their business. But I guess that's their thing. And that to me, you know, that to me reminds me of, I guess it reminds me, in some ways it reminds me of, don't take this the wrong way, Quasi. In some ways it reminds me a little bit of Time Code.
Yeah, there was that shit in Time Code, like with the part with like the dancing and like the beginning part of what's that song called? Like, if you wanna get to heaven, you gotta read
it. Yeah, Lenny Kirk's.
Yeah, that Lenny little part before Lenny Kirk's, like before Lenny Kirk's part. But yeah, like Workshop did have some of that, you know, Americana stuff kind of thrown in there. But yeah, I think the point of view is, like Patrick said, like a kind of paranoid vision of America, like America is like twisted from the inside out. Like, they had that one graphic and I forgot what it said. It was like with the gun and it was like something about like
school shootings. Yeah, that pushes the limits for sure.
Yeah.
and I do that. Yeah, I state the obvious, like, and I get, you know, Americana is twisted, it's worth saying. And I mean this can come off as you know, calling out and or you know, a negative statement, for lack of finding what I'm trying to say. But like Quasi, the skaters are very in a lane and it's cool. I do like the skating, but I feel like Workshop pushed it a little bit more. Does that make sense? Like, I don't know. Winning, Popolardo was always on Workshop until he wasn't. Winning went to Habitat, but he started out on Workshop.
Yep.
Like Josh Kalis, like there was kind of like a... avant-garde isn't the right word, but it can be a stand-in for what I'm trying to say.
Like pushing it to the limit
and progression of technical skating. Progression. Of like taking something and running with it in the logical direction.
Well that's what people, specifically the homie Sankin Garcia, referred to as like tech formalism, just like going in a straight line from like, all right, from like questionable, virtual, then mouse, then SAR, you know what I mean? Just like,
yeah.
And now it would be like the primitive team.
And not everybody even likes the primitive team. And I can see why, because it's kind of like, okay, where are we going with this?
Yeah, that's one way to look at it. But I mean, yeah, but like I said before, like for your average kid today, they're into like, sorry, I keep saying this, but like crust, like weird spots.
Yeah.
You know, the whole like dirtbag vibe. That's why like there are no skate apparel companies. Like, who's going to buy a fucking $150 Quasi windbreaker? Like, nobody, because the whole vibe is like thrift. Like, I don't know if the thrift thing is still like a huge deal, but
it very much is. It very much is. And you're right too. And I think what's been shocking about it, especially for those of us who are still adherents to the Church of Fresh, is that a lot of the kids now who are thrifting and putting together outfits, it's coming from all over the place. So stuff, in some cases, it just looks wacky. But some skaters can pull it off. And thinking back again to Dick Rizzo, I want to know who makes those brown pants, because they sit perfectly on him. Is it a height thing or is it the cut of the pants? I gotta know.
It might be, and this is just like a totally wild guess. It might be Domestics. they're still doing stuff, but
that Freddie Gall's brand that he was doing.
He's involved with that, but yeah, they're really dope.
I think we're kind of not, well, we haven't talked about directly, just that this is, I think, granted, I'd have loved to see some like Bobby DeKaiser, and there's plenty of dudes, you know, Jick Johnson, or however you pronounce his name without vowels. This is a great quasi video. And it's kind of just for my druthers, like, it's a straightforward one with titles and some interludes that we have had mixed opinions on, but like, the skating's rad.
Yeah,
the music was rad. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, there was only one weird song, which was, I think, was, you know, quote unquote weird, like Dick Rizzo's song, which I didn't really mind that much. Like, one weird song out of the whole video, I'm like. But yeah, I appreciated the the regular part structure with the names at the beginning. All right, you know, a little whatever. Yeah, what else have we talked about? I think a bunch of the stuff in Josh Wilson's part was just shocking. Like, all this shit where he would like ollie up onto something, ollie up on another thing, and then do a crooked grind, like a huge drop, and then like ollie up on one thing, and then another thing, and then ollie gap or whatever. That's, I don't remember anyone ever taking that kind of approach. Like, that was crazy.
Josh Wilson is really good. Josh Wilson is absolutely, like, him and Dick Rizzo. I have a real soft spot for those two. And I think what is really nice about going back to Quasi's point about watch this with intention is that you're not watching this with your phone or your iPad or your laptop or whatever around. There's something really nice about remembering, like, these guys are so good. And I'm thinking about like all the Johnny Wilson videos that Dick Rizzo and John Wilson show up in. And
Josh Wilson.
Excuse me, Josh Wilson. God, long week. Anyway, I know there's people sometimes will do supercuts of certain skaters, but like those two, someone should do just like a half hour mega mix of them too, because they are genuinely a joy to watch. And again, I think Quasi making a point to say watch this with intention is a pretty nice prescription for, you know, combating short attention span theater, which I think has really undermined the release of videos recently, that you can put out an absolutely brilliant part and people will forget about it in a month.
I will say that I watched the video. I took heed. I queued it up on my phone and I was like, oh, nope, they told me not to. I wrote the note on top of the notes file that we have working for every show. We share Google Docs, pulling back the curtain, baby. But it was also hilarious to then have it on like my Apple TV, and we get the one appearance of the denim car, and it cuts straight to a WeBuyAnyCar.com ad. And I'm like, do you buy the fucking denim car? Do you?
Oh, you mean on YouTube?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think you were laughing about the ads too, right?
You don't have an ad blocker?
No, I'm not that.
Oh, dude, you got to get on that. But yeah, I mean, full disclosure, I watched it on my computer because I think my son was playing like Final Fantasy 17 at the time or something.
Shit.
I was just like, fuck it. Like, I'll just watch it on the old laptop. But, oh yeah, shout out Dane Barker for the fucking Turning Point shirt.
What is that?
It's a hardcore band. Oh,
okay.
Yeah. And, you know, people, you know, reference this on Slap. Shout out Slap. But this video probably has the most like per capita like hardcore band shirts ever. Like, by far, it's not even close.
Can it ever be like, okay, we've got all the hardcore? I don't know. I am the quasi.
What?
Sorry, I'm the quasi skeptic. Sometimes I feel like these dudes are like thinking so hard about what they're doing. It's like,
oh, right, like it's.
I got a new shirt for every clip, man.
Well, Dane, you know, Dane is in a band. Like, I think I saw them.
Okay. Once.
I think they're called like he had the Charvel, the sick Charvel, and the credits. Yeah, I think Charvel. His band. Yeah, shout out Jackson Charvel for sure. Like, send us a box.
But yeah.
Real quick, let me just finish my thought. Yeah, I saw his band one time at a fest.
What's he play?
My head? I couldn't. What's that?
What's he play?
I think he plays I'm like guitar or bass. I don't think he played a drum. But yeah, like gun to my head, and couldn't tell you what they sound like because there were like 20 bands that day. But yeah, I think they're called Grand Scheme.
Yeah,
check them out.
Also, I mean, a big thing about the Mid-Atlantic is that it is still a stronghold of American hardcore. Thank God, right? You know, because... Yes,
thank God for hardcore.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it was a huge... It was like... It was and still remains like one of those places that has been carrying the torch for the sound and the style and the music that brought a lot of relief and opened up a lot of eyes. You know, I mean, remember, used to go to Riverdale, not too far from University of Maryland, because there were a bunch of punk houses there, and there were some awesome bands we used to play. Shout out to Dawn Treader, by the way, if anybody remembers them, if only because of they took their name from the Chronicles of Narnia. Anyway, yeah. I like people who do coordinated fits. I especially love people who come through with a very distinct vision for how they're going to look when they're skating. But also, you know, you think about how many people look at music as wallpaper, right? They don't even care about it. And sometimes that can show in skate videos.
Yeah.
It's also good to see that there's still skaters who love music and are passionate about it. Because, you know, sometimes you'll see, I mean, you see it with YouTube and Instagram edits. You just like, wow, you really don't care about the soundtrack for this particular skating, but that's a whole other discussion.
Well, like, I'm glad you brought that up, because I wanted to circle back to Dane Barker. He had a great ender, like a wild kickflip and then a wild ride after it. But he skated to a Superchunk song called It's So Hard to Fall in Love. I'm like, where do I know this from? And instantly I'm like, is it a Transworld ass thing? Is it a Foundation thing? Put it out on Twitter, and I quickly got answers. And in Art Bars, there's a Sebado version of the song by the same name. And, you know, it's hard not to think that that's a callback or just a happy coincidence, but I would imagine it's a callback in, you know, one way, shape, or form, because, you know, it's a cool song, it's a cool vibe, and I do like those through lines.
Yeah, I mean, back to the hardcore thing real quick. To me, like, skating, hardcore, I would even say, like, graffiti, maybe even, like, you know, rave culture in the 90s or whatever. It was all kind of, like, one milieu. Like, these are all subcultures that were kind of, like, intersecting. It was like a Venn diagram with, like, seven circles. Like, some points it would overlap, you know, some points not. So, to me, like, the hardcore shit, like, you know, go super good with skating. They're both kind of, like, DIY endeavors, you know, people just do it because they love it, not like for the money or whatever.
Absolutely. And that's the thing that made the 1990s so awesome, was that occasionally you'd have those cultures and subcultures mixing it up. And, you know, you think about skaters going to raves, you know, the whatchamacallit, the goofy boy pants, which are inspired by rave pants. You also think about skaters going to hardcore shows, or, you know, you'd have a show where there'd be a mini ramp somewhere. And it's funny, because now there's not as much, you know, people are, you know, young people aren't nearly as clicky as we were when we all were in high school. But at the same time, though, it's sometimes more difficult to get those genuine points of convergence in a fun way. But then again, I'm also washed. Like, I'm not out here on the late night tip anymore. Certainly not like I used to be. So, yeah. But anyway, you know, back to Quasi. Hard-hitting question, where do they got to go next from here? Is it worth it to continue doing these shorts like this? I mean, by the way, the Gilbert Crockett joint where he skated to, was that the Jonathan Richmond joint, Summer Feeling? Oh my God, that nailed it. And I wonder, does it make sense for Quasi to go and do a full-on full length? Or is there something going to be lost by doing that?
Well, wasn't the last one they did, Grand Prairie, wasn't that a full length?
Oh, I'm talking about, yeah, you're right.
I think it was, not 100% sure, but yeah, I think this format, I mean, this seems to be where a lot of brands are going, like, short video with, like, two skaters in a montage, or, you know, four skaters, just because of, like, the attention span of the modern day person. So, yeah, I mean, I'd be psyched to see, like, a Bobby DeKaiser, to me, like, could be Sody one day. Like, yeah, he's that, like, stellar.
He's that good.
Yeah, like, I mean, if he puts together, say, like, I don't know, however many parts you have to do, like five, six in a year, in a 6 month time period, like, if he did that, he would definitely be, like, in the conversation. So, like, maybe just a part with, like, you know, maybe if Daniel Robinall gets on full, or, you know, then Bobby, Jake Johnson part, I think people would go apeshit if Jake Johnson came out with a like an According to Hoyle part.
Jake, you gotta give us just one more. Just one for the culture, as the kids say.
All of a sudden there's like the 7-minute Jake Johnson part as the oceans begin to boil, and we all go out with the peace sign after that.
7-minute Jake Johnson part would be insane. That would little, you want to talk about Sody? That would be Sody.
I mean, end times too. I mean, I'm trying to do this apocalypse tip, but what do we have to add on that video? I liked it.
I liked
overall.
It was. You know what it was? It's the perfect length for getting hyped to go out and go skate. It was fun. And if you threw it on with a bunch of people, they'd probably enjoy it. And the soundtrack was good. And that's still really important for me.
Yeah, I'll probably rewatch it a couple times. Like, it'll probably power me through the rest of the summer a little bit.
Cool spot. John Rowe and Josh Wilson skated it. That, like, one guy crooked it. One guy frontside nose grinded it, if I recall. And they had to land on a little, it was a rail down some long stairs.
Oh, yeah.
Land on a little sidewalk. That was cool.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. I don't know where that is.
Shit, that was my next question, man.
What you got for it, Mike?
Drop a pin. You got to let us know.
Front tail, pop fakey, onto the thing. Never going to happen, baby.
That's crazy. That'd be a good
one. That in my prime, that would have been the only thing I could even think about doing. Like, okay, I'll hop in a front tail, probably like bail a bunch, get in a couple, and then be so boned I just pulled it up.
Was that a square rail? Is it a square rail or a round rail?
Square rail, kind of a big chunker. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
So in my head, it would have been doable. Terrible situation.
Well, speaking of terrible situations,
I guess this is the segue that Jason is choosing. No. On a happier note. I don't know how to bridge these things, so we'll just go with what I have written down. Here it is. Our guys from Village Psychic, they rented a Tesla and drove down from New York City to Scranton, PA to visit with Brendan, the guy behind Secret Tape on the IG. We got some insights into his stockpiling background and a glimpse into his insane and extensive collection of skateboard goodies in his basement. Holy hell, I saw that and I was like, that's a lot of stuff, man. Patrick, this is your this is the devil's bargain or something. You get to choose one skate item from the past, no matter how rare. You add it to your collection. You either owned it in the past, it's something you want, it's something you never had, it's maybe something that doesn't even exist, but that would be going far afield. What's it gonna be, man?
Before I answer that question, quick point of clarification. Was it Scranton or was it Bethlehem?
You know, they were unclear in that. So maybe it's Scranton, maybe it's Bethlehem. I was watching the intro to the video and they were talking about Scranton. And
I think it's Bethlehem because they went to the casino.
Yeah.
Where the old steel mill was.
Yep. Yeah. And also because it's like an hour. Yeah, it's about an hour and change, maybe a 90-minute drive between the two cities.
No,
it's all good. It's all good. Pennsylvania is huge, by the way. I don't know if any of y'all have driven Interstate 80 across the state going east or west. My God, I've never been so bored in my life. But the cities are all really fun. And shout out to Wilkes-Barre, by the way. Great hardcore scene over there back in the day. Anyway, if I could pick something, LeVar McBride, Blindboard with Bruce Lee on it. Jason, what about you?
Well, there was this one Henry Sanchez deck I had in like summer of 1994. It was like kind of like this surrealist Salvador Dali like painting of like a naked lady or whatever with some other stuff going on. I had to get it from the back of the shop, my local shop, Classic Boards, because like they always kept all the controversial blind decks in the back. So one day I was like, "Do you have anything in the back?" And it was like that. And that one, like a Kareem Campbell fudgesicle board, if you know that one, with like the Marilyn Monroe type on it. And I've been unable to find a picture of it anywhere. I think I even like asked the artist. I think it might have been Daniel Dunphy, the UMPHE, because he did a similar board for Rodney Mullen, I think. So if you, anyone knows anywhere where like at least like a photograph of it could be, that just hit me up. Because like that's the thing about collecting, like without, and Brendan kind of touches on this in the video, like if no one saves this stuff, it's going to be gone. Like it never even existed. Like whatever, Black Cat, Animal Farm, those old, you know, planner videos, like that deck, like I know it existed. I saw it. I remember it. But there's no proof that it did. You know what I mean? So that's one of the important like components of the collector's mind.
And thinking about the collector's mind, you know, we're living in a time now too where your online time is gamified to the point where you're often being driven to buy things. And thinking about the work that Chrome Ball Incident and Bobshirt have done, I mean, I think about those two as real pioneers in this space. You know, they are, we've talked about this in the last couple of weeks, actually last few months, you know, say, for example, our interview with Betsy from the Smithsonian, with Jacob Rosenberg, who worked on the first three, who worked on and filmed the first three Plan B videos, even talking about Ted Barrow's This Old Ledge. This is culture. You know, this stuff is cultural patrimony. And it's frightening to think that so much of it is lost and that there are very few people who are collecting for real, for real. I think about the ritual, the high school ritual, junior high school ritual, crowding around the CCS catalog and just dreaming of completes that you wanted to put together, just looking at shirts and things like that, and just how fascinating it was. And, you know, those were amongst the few places where you could get real deal, high quality photos of boards that were really on the shelves only for maybe like a month or two at a time. The turnover was much, much, much quicker. So thinking about videos in particular, you know, Jacob Rosenberg talked to us about the challenges of maintaining video archives and how you're supposed to care for those tapes. And if you think about it, a lot of people really don't care, and they do very, very, very little work to maintain their physical media. So, you know, Mike, actually Jason and Mike, you're both writers, you're both journalists. You know, a question for both of you is, how do we encourage more people to do like the secret tape? You know, oh, by the way, Brendan is awesome and he rips. He is, the video doesn't, like watching him in person is absolutely insane. He is so much fun to watch skating, and he's a pleasure to chat with. But again, the question for both of you is, how do we encourage more people to make the time to care about this stuff? Because Jason, you just were talking about a graphic that meant a lot to you almost 30 years ago, and yet we can't find a record of it anywhere. I mean, we've got images of board companies that are far more obscure than Blind, and yet nowhere.
What was the question again? I'm sorry.
I know, it's a bit of a long one. So, I mean, how do we encourage more people to do like the secret tape and hang on to this stuff and to collate it and to catalog it and to take care of it and to share it with people? That's the other thing too. Brendan's making this stuff available. He's selling it, you know. He's doing the legwork and finding these videos for people.
I'll say, I think it's tough to actually encourage people to do this because, I don't know, a lot of skaters aren't 40-something-year-old dudes doing a podcast every Thursday night in their free time. A lot aren't wholly dedicated and maybe maniacal people like Brendan getting everything they can and then making a small business out of it. And then also just like having that insane archive in their basement because, you know, I mentioned it before. You see the video room and that's like his shop. And he's like, oh, yeah, let's go downstairs where the real shit is. And you're like, what? I think it's something for the dedicated few, and I hope that those dedicated few will like carry the torch and actually make us have archives of all this. I think Brendan said, you know, what's going to be left of skateboarding in 300 years? And I don't know if I'm, you know, maybe pessimistic in my outlook or realistic or whatever. You know, we have... This is a dumb analogy maybe, but you know, we have Sophocles plays. There's like 15 of them or 7 of them out of like 100 maybe, because that's what people copied over 2,500 years. And you know, we're going to have whatever people deem valuable in X amount of years. And that might just be like the vagaries of history at play or the vagaries of way of how people maintain what they deem valuable. I think it's important to, you know, remember that like YouTube could just like someone could pull the plug on YouTube and it's all gone.
Along those lines, we talked about Johnny Wilson before. I think a bunch of his videos have been taken off of Vimeo.
Yeah.
For just music reasons or whatever. You know, so I mean, yeah, YouTube isn't like forever. Like people always say, well, be careful what you post on the internet, it's forever. But yeah, in a way, but like, yeah, YouTube could, you know, be gone tomorrow, you know. Stranger shit has happened.
I had my one Benihana. I did one Benihana in like 2005. It was on video. It was posted to platinumseagulls.com. Nobody ever backed up that video. When our server gave up in 2008, my Benihana was gone.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this when Jake Rosenberg was on, right?
Yeah.
Like a lot, like preserving digital media.
Oh yeah, and so, it's a huge amount of it's a huge amount of labor. But you know, thinking about the other physical stuff, not just videos, but then thinking about boards. I mean, Jason and Mike, you know, you talked about the idea of like 300 years in the future. If you could have one video part or one video, each of you, that 300 years from now, in some post-apocalyptic future. What would be that video that people would be like, you remember skateboarding from the late 90s, early 2000s?
You mean like a video to show to our dolphin overlords?
Exactly.
probably questionable. If I could do just questionable virtual and secondhand smoke, that's good for me.
The Holy Trinity?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I'll narrow it down to a part because you might have said that, and that's where my mind went. And I'm going kind of not necessarily the most iconic, but like Dennis Bucinich in the Real video. His part from the Real video when he should have gotten Sody, where he skated Jonathan Rickman.
Right, right.
Like that's kind of a close to perfect. Like here's what skating can be if you're really cool and you do it very well. And it's very good.
Yeah, back to like encouraging people to, you know, archive their shit. Like, yeah, like Mike said, I really think you have to be like a maniac. You know, like myself, I mean, it kind of goes back to like, well, when I was a youngin', my mom threw out like my first board, like the Sims Pharaoh, all my mags from the 80s and 90s, all my old decks that I had. So now I'm like, all right, I don't throw anything away. Like I save like old wheels, old trucks, every deck I skate. Shoes if they're cool, like shoe boxes if they're interesting.
How far back does your archive go?
Current archive goes to probably like 2006 or seven.
No shit.
But yeah, sometimes I'll even save like tags off of garments if they're interesting.
Have you been in the same house for this, or like how does it work?
Yeah, I've been in the same house since 2006.
Sorry to also, derail. It's just like, it's very interesting.
Yeah. Also stickers. Like I have like a accordion file with stickers. The stickers aren't alphabetized, which I should probably do that because it's hard to find like, oh, where's that one like fucking season sticker? Like it's hard to find. So I should probably get one of those alphabetized like accordion files for those. But anyway, yeah, like I won't put a sticker on a board unless I have at least two. So if I get a cool sticker, I'll just throw it in there unless I have doubles, in which case I might put one on the board. So yeah, I mean, I'm pretty bad, but I mean, like,
we're good.
Yeah, but, yeah, depends how you look at it. But like, you know, compared to Brendan here, I mean, I'm like a fucking feng shui master, you know. So it depends how you look at it.
So you know, and just thinking about that, Jason, you know, I haven't moved. I've moved quite a few times since 2004. So some stuff I did keep at my parents' house. I remember my childhood bedroom got repainted. Got rid of all of my skate magazine clippings that were on the wall, which are all organized by distributor or by groups of companies, which was really, really awesome. My friend Ryan took a great portrait of me in front of all that before that all went down. But, you know, I find just like lugging around videos and even just the parts box to be a lot. And I also have a bunch of old skate shirts and band shirts that I have up in storage now with mothballs and everything like that. Or cedar chips is probably the better thing to do. Anyway, you're right. Like it's a job, like you to carry this stuff around. And I have a sticker box now, isn't like I have an old last resort box that's completely filled with stickers, stuff that people sent me, things I've traded, things I've picked up over the years. And I've thought about putting that into a folder. Is that a bit much, or is it cool to just have like the box of stickers? You guys empty it out and see what you want to put on some.
I organize my stickers into, this is like the highest level of organization that I've done with old stuff. Put all the stickers into like, oh, here's old IOTA skateboard stickers, like, which is a brand out of Minneapolis in the early 2000s. And I grouped them with, God, I don't even know. But I've got like the Todd Bratrude bag. I've got the, oh, old flow shit bag. I've got the Familia skate shop bag. I've got the et cetera bag, okay. Like folder envelope. I got my quarter snacks envelope, I think, you know, from getting some old sticker giveaway from Snackman, where it's like, oh, now anytime I get these stickers, like, it goes in there. I don't know. There's, I like that organizational.
So it's not like alphabetized, but it is organized in some form or fashion.
Yeah, I think it's down into like 8 or 9 categories, 7, 8, right. 9 categories.
Yeah, that'd be funny if someone had like a file cabinet like filled with stickers, like alphabetized, like a it's like that old Mitch Hedberg bit, like, oh, like a, in case you need that donut receipt, like, oh, here it is, D for donut.
Like, at what point does it become, what does it become too much? I mean, because at the very least, Brendan has figured out a business model for this stuff. And also, you know, thinking about a lot of those videos, something that him and Look Back Library are doing is that they're providing a real link to the past, because when you think about archiving and archival culture, it's really up to whoever is doing the copying and the taping and whatever and deciding what lives on digitally. Like, there's editorialism that's happening in that process. And so it's really interesting. We often talk about 1996 being this apex year for skate videos. We never talk about Planet Earth in the mix of FTC2, Welcome to Hell. Even the what is it, Stereo's second video, Tin Can Folklore, came out that same year, but never gets talked about in the same breath as Trilogy.
Hated that video. It was a drum.
It never gets talked about in the same breath as, say, Welcome to Hell or Trilogy. Or even Eastern Exposure 3.
What video? Silver?
Silver is good. It's a Ty Evans.
Silver's all right. Like, it was pretty good. Like, I got it that year, I think, because there were not that many good videos out. But then, like, after Mouse came out, it was like, you know.
Well, that's the thing. It's interesting because that, you know, what ends up living online is something that ends up having a ripple effect on what young kids, for example, are looking for inspiration when they're looking at skate stuff they've never seen. One thing that kills me, there's this deluxe promo called Ride On. I have a dub of it somewhere in my closet. And the only version that's out right now on YouTube is a wrecked copy. The audio is all out of sync. The tape that they used to, the tape that was digitized was very clearly damaged. And that's a recurring thing across a lot of videos from the late 80s till probably like 97, 98. And that's super frustrating because that means that there's a whole era that is not being archived, that's not being captured.
So let me ask you this. I can remember, like, there used to be, I don't know, videos were, you wanted to watch every video because there weren't that many videos back in the day, but rarely there'd be a bad video or the video's skating wasn't up to snuff. Like, where do we draw the line on what needs to be archived? Are we, you know, completists, or is there, you know, the editorializing that you mentioned, Patrick? Like, not everything's created equally, or, you know, some of it's good, some of it's bad, just to be frank. Like, are we okay if the bad stuff kind of falls into the, you know, dust of history, or do we need it all?
Yeah, I mean, well, if you're a maniac about this shit, you can probably, like, rate or whatever a video by its impact. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or how well it's held up. Like, you know, something like I don't want to say. Like some, you know, like a 777 video, if there was one, you know. Actually, that would be awesome because there would be a donger part. No, whatever. Like some old company that's not around anymore. Like skating looks dated or whatever. Filming's lame. You know, it might not want to include that in your archive as opposed to like a visual sound or something like that. You know. So I mean,
yeah.
If you're this deep into the wormhole, you can probably prioritize a little bit.
I'm just thinking of It was a local video, like a regional video. It wasn't any hotspot of skating. And it was advertised in 411, and they literally put all the best tricks from the video in there. And in the 411 ad, and I bought it at the shop when I was young. I was like, you know, 15, 16. My buddy, who I'd go on to, you know, be roommates with, and he's a lot years older than me, but, you know, he bought the video too. And then a couple years later, we're both like, oh, shit, you bought that video? God damn, it fucking sucked. And it's like, in a weird way, now that I think of it, it's like, it's cool that you have that documentation of what was happening in a non-hotspot region. And there is value in that. But, you know, from just the skater standpoint, you're like, well, they kind of did a shitty job with it, and the skating wasn't that good.
Yeah, I mean, like,
there's value in that documentation.
Yeah, like anything, any type of photographs or videotape from the pre-internet, pre-like smartphone era is like gold. You know, like there's all these Instagram accounts that I follow, like about the 80s,
right?
Like Chasing the 80s is one of them, whatever. And they'll just have like some like camcorder footage of some high school in Indiana from like 1987, and it's like fucking fascinating.
Yeah, and you like, do this love is that.
Crazy.
It gives you a real window into a time that is not particularly well documented for a lot of people, unless they are archivists or obsessives. And the other part of it too is, you know, this goes back to the question of like skate history. I wish it, like, in a perfect way, in a perfect world, excuse me, you know, you'd have a museum for all this stuff. You know, I mean, I can't like imagine how cool that would be. Like, some shit up, you know, the United States invented skateboarding. Why is this not a priority for the Library of Congress? Actually, here's a question. You know, the Library of Congress will take music and movies and archive them as culturally significant. If you had to pick a skate video, each of you, to go into that archive, what would it be?
Mouse.
Really?
Do I even have to say it? Like,
Seven Steps to Heaven?
No, that's not what I mean, Tim and Henry's? No,
that's what I thought.
Yeah,
Tim and Henry's?
It's tough, man. I either put Questionable or Tim and Henry's.
I think I'd have to say it's a very, very tough call between video like days.
Photosynthesis? I don't know. That's an insane question.
But big, I mean, argument for Cherry. Big argument for Cherry. Honestly, I mean, it's not even recency bias. That was a decade ago, more or less.
I mean, yeah, you're right. Like Cherry, I mean, it turned the skate world, the fashion world, pop culture on its head, and it shaped the next decade, which is weird to say. But then, you know, if you look at, say, Video Days was Spike Jonze's second video, because his first was Rubbish Heap, but it was Mark Gonzalez handing a copy of Video Days to Sonic Youth when they played at the Palladium here in LA. They got them to hire Spike Jonze to do the video for 100% from the album Dirty, and then from there, Spike Jonze, you know, eventually, now look, man's got Academy Awards. So you could say the Video Days is one of those, if, you know, is culturally significant because of the ripple effect that it had over the decade. I mean, Spike Jonze's video, you remember those music video collections of all the videos by directors like Michel Gondry, Chris Cunningham, which was crazy, and then, of course, Spike Jonze. Man, I wish we could do something like that for skate videographers. That would be cool.
That would be very cool. And I mean, kind of in that vein, you know, maybe it's Fully Flared, which I don't know. You could argue that's kind of like an apex of like incredible skating and video production. Spike Jonze was involved with that, as was Ty Evans. And I don't know. Sometimes I feel like we have a past bias as opposed to a recency bias with what really defines anything. So I'll throw my chips in for Cherry and Fully Flared.
Fully Flared? The music sucked.
Bad choice.
Yeah, there was some shit in there.
I don't know.
I think Fully Flared is kind of underrated. Like it's or unfairly maligned.
Here's the thing. When that video came out, it was the most anticipated video. I don't remember any other video from 2007. I don't care about any other video. It's like that video was it, and it came out, and everybody was like, oh, yeah, that was really fucking good. And there's kind of like a revisionist history because, you know, parts of it are kind of extra compared to what Cherry did when it basically reset the culture. Cherry's not even as extreme as, you know, some of the later, more recent Bill Strobeck videos are in terms of the camera work and the waiting for shit to happen aspect. Like, I don't know. It's good to rewatch these things, and it's shit. I suppose we need people to archive them, huh?
Exactly.
That's where the Smithsonian and, you know, Betsy Gordon over there comes in. They're fighting the good fight.
I mean, that's what we need. We need a Smithsonian wing just for skateboarding.
Let's talk to the Norwegians about getting a little spot on Svalbard.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I got it right the second time. You know, where they got the seed bank?
Skate video bank? So basically.
Under the permafrost.
So under the permafrost,
Ty Evans in a snowsuit.
Wait, could you explain? I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, I don't even know if it's actually on Svalbard, but Some of the Nordic countries have places in cold places where they've established seed banks to make sure that, you know, the I don't know, humankind's agriculture can be climate controlled or climate stable place that you know might keep us going a little longer than the trajectory we're on right now.
If I could add one thing to the skateboard annex of the Svalbard Global Seed Vault, we need an original pair of blind jeans in there.
All right, we'll get them up there. And I confirmed.
They were good, dude. They were so soft. I don't know where that denim came from.
Exactly. But. Just like one pair. Oh, yeah. We just need one pair and all of the cut and sew instructions and the template for it so that in the future, you know, in a post-apocalyptic, post-climate change future where we've destroyed everything and there's like a small little band of humanity that is rebuilding, they'll have food for the future, but they'll also have the drip.
But yeah, also, if you put it up in the Arctic region, it'll keep it safe from our dolphin overlords, too.
Exactly.
That's a good idea.
Also, one more thing to add. It's not skate-related, but I think also this is something for the future. And, you know, very similar to how we marvel at Stonehenge or the pyramids and other antiquities, you know, just to show the peak of human creativity and the ability to reshape the way that we think about the world. There's one more thing we got to add to this archive, and you know what I'm going to say. The Ralph Lauren polo snow beach jacket.
Yeah, it's a good jacket.
Right? Like, can you imagine 5,000 years in the future, someone just looking at that just like, snow beach, what does it mean? What did this say about the culture of the 1990s?
For some reason, I thought you were going to talk about heel flip bear, because that damn bear is heel flipping, and I won't hear any other trick.
the Polo Palace collab? No, Snow Beach. Snow Beach would be timeless. That'd be one of those things you just put up in a museum.
So I don't know what Snow Beach is. I'm going to add my one piece of the collection that I'd want, give anything for it. The Guy Mariano, and I skated this back in the day, Guy Mariano girl deck, the Eames chair graphic. I'd do a lot to get that and stick it in a box in my basement and never look at it. Well, I'd be pretty.
Speaking of which, funny thing, right here in the Frozen Carbonite headquarters, I got a reissue of the Randy Colvin Censorship is Weak as Fuck board that I haven't figured out a place to put it in my house yet. I don't know. It's like the one with the naked lady, you know?
A lot of mix. It doesn't actually say censorship is weak as fuck, or does it?
I think it says it like on
top the graphic.
Might be the top graphic. It might be like on like the black bag it came in. I might just put it up in my office here because no one really comes up here.
It's a conundrum, man. But I would be stoked though if you found a place for it.
Oh yeah.
Which brings us to the part of our show where we talk every week about what we're stoked on. Patrick, what are you stoked on this week?
This week, I'm stoked on Spitfire Wheels. I am also stoked on the fact that a homie came through last night and blessed me with a ticket to Arsenal versus Barcelona. It was an exhibition match played at SoFi Stadium here in LA. Arsenal won 5-3. It was a fantastic time. It was really, really wonderful. It's summer. It's high summer. So I'm stoked on iced coffee. And I'm staying laughing because thinking back to vacation in Paris at our hotel, there was a lady who every morning, a loud screeching voice was complaining in English about not getting her iced coffee. And this place didn't do iced coffee. Mind you, there was a Starbucks around the corner that had it. This past weekend, got to hang out with Tommy from Jenkum and from CSEF and his wife. We did a little double date. We went out to dinner, and then we went out to a rave at the Museum of Contemporary Art in downtown LA. It was great fun. Also, just picked up a article in the New York Times about Daddy's Board Shop purchasing CCS back in the day. And finally, in memory of the late, great Sinead O'Connor, who we lost this week, Nick Michael's part in the Lottie's Skate Shop Must Be Stopped video where he skates to Jerusalem by Sinead O'Connor. Jason, what you stoked on?
Hard body ass song. That's it.
Venture Trucks out of San Francisco, California. Stoked on them. Of course, now I'd be remiss if I didn't include a Venture Truck and a Venture Awake shirt in the Arctic Skate Archive for the year 2525 or whatever. Also stoked on a little video of a blind demo from 2000. A gentleman by the name of Dave Diggs posted this like a month ago. It was a demo put on by Coliseum at the skate park in Andover, Massachusetts. And best part about this is like prime, Ronnie Krieger in his prime, Jesus H. Christ on a skateboard. I mean, yeah, if you want to see one of the best to ever do it, do their thing, definitely check it out. Also, James Craig, Josh Casper, some other people too. Also stoked on, of course, we mentioned before, This Old Ledge series on Thrasher, just like interesting as fuck. Yeah, I really can't say enough good things about that. And stoked on the music of Suede, which I just started listening to recently. I don't know why I didn't back in the day. Like, I was in Oasis, and it was in a Blur. For some reason, never picked up on Suede. So recently, when Supreme did like a t-shirt design, that's a takeoff on the first album cover. So I was like, oh, I want to go check this out. And I was like, damn, dude, this is pretty sick. It's kind of like not as twee as Blur and not as like bro as Oasis. So I'm stoked on that a little bit. There's some new music there.
So good.
Mike,
so good.
Yeah, seriously. Mike, what are you stoked on this week?
I'm stoked this week to have skated today with skate Twitter homie Connor Doherty, who's from LA, like Patrick's environs. But now that the pandemic is over, I think we can all agree, like, Connor's back up here. He's got some Minnesota ties. Fun to skate with him. We skated the Hiawatha ramp today. It was hot as hell. I mean, relatively speaking, we'd been spared like the heat wave that has been hitting everywhere in the country, but I want to say like the heat index was up to 107, 105, 107. So we were in an indoor warehouse. Most warehouses are indoors, sweating our butts off in a cool bowl. That's very wonderful. I don't know. It was fun to skate with Connor and just like motivate each other to tricks. That's also cool. And I am stoked on the heat. Not that it's necessarily a good thing in terms of like global human history and future, but Jason, I know that you mentioned when it's hot as hell, that's like when you're at your finest.
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
Yeah, we skated like an hour and a half. I was in like Patagonia baggies and a dry fit shirt, and everything was just soaked. Like the dry fit was not fitting dry whatsoever. Put it all in a beach towel, changed my clothes, picked up my kid. But I came out like I'd been in a sauna. Like pumping a ramp and sweating your ass off is kind of a good thing. We should all do it more often. That's it for our show this week. Be sure to check out mostlyskateboarding.net for links and other show notes. Props, as always, to Templeton for editing the show.
Yes, sir.
And doing the show notes. I mean, he's not on this week. We always appreciate him. Thanks for keeping the shit going, man. Until then, which is next week when our next show comes on, you can keep up with us online. Jason, where can the people find you?
On Twitter, at Carbonite1994, on the Instagram, at FrozenCarbonite, and writing stuff for quartersmax.com. Working on it. Patrick, where can the people find you?
You can find me on Threads, believe it or not, under the handle at Pikigongo. Same handle over at Instagram and on Twitter. Still, somehow, under the handle at Colonel K Speaks, and also working on stuff for the Harold Hunter Foundation. Bong bong. And Mike, where can the people find you on the internet?
I'm staying true to the OG platforms. Got the same handle on Twitter and Instagram. It's at M Munzenrider. Hey guys, tune in next week. We'll have another show.
There. It's my turn.